Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
The ADPFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 298. On the podcast today, Paul Johnson, Executive Director of Metal Tiger. And this is a company I hold shares in. And this is after I spoke to Paul last time, and I did more research on the company, and I really liked what I read. Now, listen, I'm not offering investment advice. Please use this as a stepping stone to do some more research yourself. But I think you'll find the interview very informative. We go through everything in the business. And like Paul is a very sharp guy, and he knows his stuff. And that's why I like the company. And you can see an article, actually, if you go to sharepickers.com. There's an article I wrote entitled Three Small Companies with Big Futures. And Metal Tiger is one of those companies. So go to sharepickers.com. And click on that link. Also on the podcast, the macro and micro news, the broker forecast, and if you'd like a dedication, if you'd like me to dedicate this podcast to you, essentially I have 87 five-star ratings on iTunes. I want to get to 100, 13 remain. If you do that, if you click on the link here at sharepickers.com, it'll take you to iTunes. Just leave a review. Tell me what you're doing to listen to the podcast, what you like about it, what you don't like about it. Don't mention that, actually. What you like about it, and a five-star review, and I'll read that out and dedicate the podcast to you. Joining me on the podcast right now is Executive Director of Metal Tiger, Paul Johnson. Hi, Paul. You all right?
Hi, Justin.
Thanks for coming on again. And I've got to say, right, since we chatted last, I didn't hold any stock of your company, but I've done some research and I've been liking what I'm reading. You seem very switched on, very busy guys, and also just a CV. I mean, I recently just published a blog post saying three small companies with big futures. And yes, you were one of those companies I mentioned because not only you guys, but the chairman there, Terry. I mean, people should look him up, shouldn't they, and look at his CV. Just want to explain Terry's background, if you can, if it comes to mind. Can you do that?
Yes, sure. We were a little bit disappointed because although we like any coverage of the company, when we actually saw that you'd focused entirely, really, on Terry, you know, the rest of us were a little bit jealous. But it's a good thing to do. I could bore you for quite some time with Terry's background and what he's been up to over the years. But in essence, he's a very well-known resource prospector, finder and developer in Australia. His most recent success was with Sirius and the Nova Nickel discovery, which was one of those wonderful elusive 100 bagger scenarios where the stock went from 5 cents a few years ago up to $5 in, I think it was about 8 months in total. It's the kind of scenario that most of us private investors on the in the resource sector are looking for, and he has delivered that kind of multi-return scenario. I think in total it's four times in his career history. So he's well known for finding significant deposits and making value for shareholders. And we're delighted that he's our chairman, and he's a huge driving force within the business. People perhaps don't realise the amount of work that he does, rooting out new opportunities. Perhaps in the relatively near future, they'll start to see a little bit more of his efforts printed via RNS, or certainly we hope so. But he's a major asset to the company.
Yeah, but well, listen, I didn't mean to, you know, do you a disservice, but of course, successful people align themselves with successful people. So he wouldn't have been with Metal Tiger unless he liked you and the rest of the guys there, would he?
Well, I hope not. And no, he's not the kind of guy who would get involved with a business unless he was confident that he was moving in the right direction and had the right people. But we're just delighted to have him there. The geological expertise, the history of making people significant amounts of money, and really significant amounts of money, make the difference. Now, we're capped under 3 million quid at the moment. We're a small company. We're exactly the kind of scenario that Terry has started with in the past, in fairness. Small caps, looking forward to the future, trying to find the next big project And we're glad he's working with us, and hopefully he'll do it again.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I mean, first of all, like I said, you are a 3 million market cap company, and you seem to be involved in a lot of things for a small valuation. And in fact, someone who's listening right now to the podcast who may not have heard of Metal Tiger, you basically have two different divisions, and that's direct equities and direct projects. Can you explain about that?
Yeah, I can. I think sometimes there's a little confusion with this because people look at the investing vehicles in the resources sector on AIM, and very often what they're trying to do is they buy other stocks and shares of resources companies, and they hope to make a capital return and build the net asset value of the business. Our model is not like that. We have a direct equities division where we hold shares and warrants in other resource companies, predominantly those that are listed on AIM. And we trade that resource equity portfolio to make gains that we then send. We send the cash over into our direct projects division to fund our activities on the ground. And the whole purpose behind us trading and investing in the resource equities is to make significant amounts of cash that we can then use to push our projects forward. And that means that we can avoid, where possible going forward, being reliant upon the market with regard to secondary placings and fundraisings, where in today's environment, people will simply not give you money on sensible terms, and many companies in the market have to take discounted placings, and we don't want to do that to our existing shareholders. What we want to do is support our existing shareholders and make them feel confident that with Metal Tiger, they have a company that's looking after their interests and not just the interests of those that want to enter the company now through a secondary.
Yeah, so at the moment, the equities you hold have got here on your website are Kibo Mining, Eurasia Mining, and Ariana Resources. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, those are the three big companies that we undertook strategic investments with, where we placed a relatively large amount of money for us directly with the company's management team, as it were, and we got shares and warrants. We also hold a variety of other shares that we purchased on market. The most obvious example recently being Orsu Metals, which is listed on the AIM and TSX with the ticker OSU, where we crept over the notifiable level. And we may go notifiable again in other holdings going forward. But again, the whole principle behind these holdings is to make significant amounts of cash and then funnel that cash within the business to fund our active projects. Okay. So we're not trying to build a big net asset value on our investment side or our direct equity side, because we're literally trying to spend the money wisely that we generate from direct equities and pay for our projects.
So when you're looking for new companies to invest in, I mean who's involved, and what are you looking for essentially?
Well, we follow share pickers.
Yeah, well, that's the main source.
And we see what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
Well, in actual fact, we get we do our own work. We have a member of our team at the moment who's poring over the markets and looking at all different opportunities on the principally the AIM market and the TSX. We obviously have a variety of different knowledge of companies in the past and what their assets are and what their potential might be. We get suggestions in from shareholders directly and sometimes through Twitter and so on. And we do keep an eye out for what's happening generally on the Twitter feed and what's happening on the discussion boards to see what people are thinking, because the private investors out there, they carry out tons of private research. They publish it through these forums, and it can actually give you quite a lead on the next best opportunity. We have quite a diverse range of holdings, and we're just looking for those scenarios where shares have the potential to, can I say this word without getting shot, multibag in a really efficient time period, because that gives us the cash that we want to generate for our projects business.
Yeah, do you know what? It is phenomenal. I mean, like, the podcast is getting more popular every day, and I get more people suggesting stuff, you know, and to a certain point, I can't read all of it, but you certainly pick up, all of a sudden you see, and I look at volume as well, and you see the interest, especially on Twitter, about certain stocks, and the phenomenal amount of research goes into them from some guys on Twitter. And they'll say to me, oh, this company is like got some, this much in cash, the market cap is almost, you know, it's nearly half or whatever. What? So I'll look, you know, things that will stand out, and I'll look it up. But I mean, yeah, you do get sort of almost signposts. I mean, if you have the right kind of followers, or you follow the right people, I mean, there's an amazing amount of people out there, aren't there, that do their own research. And but there are a lot of fools as well who just try and deramp shit. But I mean, I'm just into the positive side of it. And yeah, it does produce an amazing amount of leads, you know?
Oh, that's absolutely true. But the discussion boards work both ways. I mean, unfortunately, we don't have much regulation of the discussion boards, which means that you can have some complete loons who are posting there and often with economic rationale behind what they're doing, you know, to either drive the prices up or drive them down for whatever reason. But amongst all of that noise, if you can focus on the right people, you can find some great ideas. And in my investing lifetime, for many, many years now, many of the companies I've made money through have come from other people's research, where they've said, have a look at this stock, and you go and you see, and you would perhaps have never heard of it if someone hadn't given you the prompt in the first place.
Yeah, and do you know what? It's not a tip, but I say on the podcast, always use, you know, the information you get in the podcast to start your own research. Use it as a stepping stone, because not everything's going to be gold, you know. And so it's not so much a, you know, advising you to buy, just advise you to do some research. And that's a good starting point. Yeah.
Yeah, you do talk your own book, don't you? And everyone is enthusiastic about the stocks that they've bought. And they're probably even more enthusiastic when they've bought them, they've got the positions, and they're thinking, blimey, it's not moving. And they want it to move, so they become even more verbose about how wonderful it is. Well, you've just got to take a sensible line. I think you're pretty secure. If companies have the finance to survive this downswing in the sector, they have a sensible set of assets or a plan for the future. And they've got a story that can really engage the marketing and engage the investor base, then heck, you can make some serious money. It might not fly in through the door tomorrow. It might take a little while. But as we saw in the last upturn in the UK market in 2009-10-11, the returns are astonishing when you pick the right companies. I remember buying Mariana Resources back in 2009 at 2 pence a share, and I think it actually went to 54 pence over a 2 or 3 year period. That's plus 25 times return on your money. I don't know many scenarios, perhaps biotech and certain technology scenarios, where you can make that kind of return.
Yeah. So what? How did you decide? I'm assuming here that the investment in equities came first, did it or not? That part of the business.
No, it was a little. When we started, we took over Brady X. Well, took over is the wrong phrase. We changed Brady Exploration, which was an old natural resources shell, converted it to Metal Tiger in June last year, 2014. Put some finance in to sort out the financial position of the business. Raised a little bit more in October. By which time, after 3 months, we'd done all the administration that you need to do to sort out a shell vehicle and make it ready for the future. And then we decided that we had to make some investments, you know, proper investments in companies that we thought had potential. And our very first one was Kibo Mining. And Kibo Mining went up dramatically within, I think, a few working days of us sending the money over. The shares that we bought at 1.5 pence were trading intraday up to about 12 pence. So we made a dramatic initial windfall gain, and that really provided the company with the seed money that it needed to make other investments and to start to take on the projects. Since then, of course, we've been trading and generating more cash as we go to feed into the project side of the business. But what we want the investors to focus on, and they will focus on in time as the news starts to flow, is the project side of the business. If they view our equities as really a cash generation section of the company, and they focus on the work we're doing in Spain, the work we're doing in Thailand, then that's where we think the real big upside potential is for shareholders. And I understand that people are locked into the equity side because perhaps of the gain that was made on Kibo. and we want to make games like that again, but it's to fund our projects on the ground.
Yeah, so the direct projects on the ground here. So you've got in Thailand, you've got gold, copper in exploration there, Spain, gold and tungsten, and Tanzania, gold and uranium. What of these at the moment? I mean, I know you've just had some news out from Spain, haven't you? Do you want to run through that?
Yeah, sure. Well, in Spain, we started a joint venture with our partners, MEN Finland, in earlier on in the year, and started to drill for tungsten around April time. They've been doing work on the ground for a number of years in Spain, and they'd identified a number of targets for tungsten over a relatively focused area. And they really needed to actually go underneath the surface and do some drilling. So we bought a nice small drill rig, a little bit more than Bob the Builder type, but yeah, not an enormous thing, so that we could do our own drilling. And the data that we received over the spring and early summer months up to the end of June was absolutely super. And it confirmed all of the work that they'd done on the ground previously, the surface-based work, and demonstrated that there were potentially two large tungsten deposits within our ground. And that's only the work that we've done to date, and there's plenty of more tungsten work that we can do, and there are more tungsten targets across the license. So we've found significant tungsten mineralization, which is ticking that first box. In this this drill campaign after the summer, because during the summer it's 35, 40 degrees, it's too hot to drill. Now with the autumn campaign, we're focusing initially on the gold targets within the Zarita license. We've got two targets for gold there, and it would be fabulous if we could follow up our tungsten success with some gold success. Thereafter, depending on the results of the whole campaign to date, we'll then decide whether we go after more gold targets or whether we go after more tungsten mineralization. But what's happening in Spain in front of our eyes at the moment, and nothing is certain until you've actually, you know, you're producing the metal and selling it, of course. But we appear to be building a substantial tungsten opportunity in Spain. And that, as we've seen with W Resources recently, W Resources are 40 kilometres from our site to the west. With their share price has been rising quite dramatically on the back of the work that they've been doing, and that's tungsten focused. So if we can build a good tungsten business in Spain, then I think that will attract a lot of investors as we move forward.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at their share price. It's gone from spot 2.5 up to spot 8, pretty much.
It has. Are we jealous of that, Justin? I could say yes.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Let's go into some questions, because I sent out a tweet in the week, and a couple of people asked some questions. And so here's one from the first one. As an investor in MTR, which is a ticker code, of course, it appears to me that we have really struggled with the SP, the share price. I believe this is due to lack of investor appetite for AIM, exchange, and natural resource sector. I personally do not see this changing for many years to come for various reasons. Do you agree?
No.
Good.
That's what you want to hear, though, in fairness, because at the bottoming phase of the market cycle, you don't get too many positive comments. You hear mostly negative stuff. It was the same back in late 2008, early 2009. Our share price is actually performing quite well if you look relative to the sector over the last year. Most of the shares in our sector are down considerably since the middle of 2014, whereas we sit around, depending on the day of the week, 60%, 70%, 80%, 90% up on where we started a year ago. So in relative terms, we're doing well. In absolute terms, when you look at the share price, you think of the work and the progress, the profits that have been made through equities, the projects that we've taken on, the success in drilling in Spain, the work in Thailand, and so on and so forth. And you think, blimey, the share price hasn't moved much at all, and you feel disappointed. So relative performance is very strong versus our peers. Absolute performance is frustrating. The sector cycle turns. It always has done, it always will do. And the time to be buying any resource share, not just Metal Tiger, but buying the sector is when it's at the bottom and you don't think it's ever going to get out of this trough.
Yeah, and I heard you on a podcast recently, I think, with Terry there, and he was saying that this is the best time to go looking for, you know, for assets and stuff, because they're hammered, you know, and you can pick up some real good bargains at this price. And like I said, the share price to me in the last 6 months, it's traded in a nice steady range there between 0.8 and 1 pence, really, isn't it? So, you know.
Yeah, we'd like to see it move in line with the performance internally and as published to market. Via RNS, but it just doesn't work like that in the real world in our space on AIM. The movements can be fast and furious. Now, I would be delighted if we moved to a more sensible level where we feel we ought to be, but that will come in time as long as we keep pushing the news out and as and when the market graces us with a decent re-rating process. But Terry is hugely enthused by the opportunity is available. He spends a lot of time in Southeast Asia. There are some super projects, not just in Southeast Asia, but all around the world. He has access to so many different things because of who he is. He dismisses the vast majority of stuff that crosses his desk. You know, we sometimes very often identify projects here. We have a look at them, and then after some work, we pass them in front of Terry. And 9 times out of 10, it's a no. And he focuses very quickly on the stuff that has real value and where he can see the future. And he's done this so many times before that we rely upon his judgment. And he was right in Spain, because the Spanish opportunity came through Terry, the Thai opportunities through Terry. And I'm excited to see where we go with this business and which of the projects really does start to take hold.
Cool. Okay, it's another question. What would the optimum number of direct on the ground projects for you be?
There's no optimum number other than we have to think about how much we can manage, both in terms of our management team, operational teams, and finance. You often see people saying, "Oh, when's the next placing going to be?" Well, we're not driven in a manner that means we run out of cash and then suddenly have to desperately go cap in hand to the markets. Our business model and how we spend our cash on our projects is constructed to make sure that we are comfortable at all times. So I would say it depends on how you manage the projects that you have. The question is, if you have a growing project, and it can be XYZ country, and it becomes a valuable piece of your business, you can keep it within the wrapper, you can sell it to a third party, or you can spin it out and put it into its own vehicle, or there's a variety of other quirky things that you can do. So you don't necessarily have to keep projects within your wrapper. There's things that you can do with them. And of course, as you move a project out, through one of those mechanisms, you create space and you can do more. At this point in time, we have our two main projects, which are Spain and Thailand. We have our work with Kibo, and hopefully there'll be further news on that coming out very soon to market. We have other opportunities under review, quite a few at the moment. It's fair to say, I would say we have half a dozen or so different things that are, you know, seriously that we're looking at any one point in time. And we've given some information to market. We will only take projects on if we can manage them. So I don't really have an optimum number for you, but we can certainly take more at this point in time.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the time with the share price, people have to be a bit patient, because I think you get, the average AIM investor wants to jump in, make a quick buck and jump out. And they think, well, if you're an investor, and you believe in the company, you should have patience, shouldn't you, really,
Yeah, well, I can do, as a director, any director of a company could come out with RNS announcements, drive the share price to a double up, and then the investors that bought in a penny will sell for two. And then you've got a whole heap of other investors who come in at two, who then want to know when it's going to go to four and so on. And it becomes very, very difficult to manage that scenario. We believe here that we just focus on building the business in a very, very quick and efficient manner, but very strongly, so that our asset base is building as time goes by in our projects, and we manage our finances well, and we don't overcommit ourselves to make us beholden to the to secondary placings at significant discounts and so on. And then the value will come through. Now, perhaps we're not quite as exciting as we need to be. Maybe we need to run, I don't know, naked down, you know, through Bank Tube Station with MTR stapled and a neon sign to our heads or something. I could certainly recommend that maybe to members of the team, but I don't think they'd go with it. We get very excited about our projects and about what's happening within Spain and Thailand, and one hopes with Tanzania and the work that we're doing with Kibo and the other things as well. What we don't do is we don't communicate quite as effectively as we should do, certainly on our website with regard to projects. We're not disseminating information about the projects as we should do. So we're now working on improving our communications there to get the message out. But we see our business in a much bigger way than perhaps investors in the market does. We view ourselves as a larger beast than we really are. And we think we deserve a higher capitalization. We're driving the business in towards that, and it will come in time.
Yeah, no, I believe that. Like I say, if you are laying the foundations, the work is going ahead, then do you know what? You shouldn't worry about the share price so much. It's you know, like you say, you can, if you want, artificially ramp it up, but there's no advantage in that for anyone, really, apart from the people who try and jump in and jump out and have no loyalty to the business anyway.
That's the problem.
So you sort of answered this, but someone just questioned, is a placing needed? That's what someone just said.
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask me about running naked through Bank Tube Station.
Yeah, well, that will come.
No, a placing is not needed. I'll get accused for slowing down my answer now by certain of our friends on the discussion boards, I'm sure. But the way we manage the businesses is so that we have the cash and liquid assets to deal with our commitments comfortably going forward. Yeah. Will we raise money again through secondary placings? I think that's almost a definite, because that's the nature of the capital markets. Why would you be on AIM if you didn't have a view about raising money? It's exactly the primary purpose of the market: raise money and hopefully spend it wisely. We may be fortunate, and we may trade our equities or sell a project or do something that means we don't ever have to go back to market again, but I think that's extremely unlikely. And I think we would probably want to make profits on equity trading, combine it with sensible fund raises along the way without crucifying our existing shareholder base. But at any one point in time, and this is the point, we manage our business so that at any one point in time, a placing is not needed, in the sense of we have to go out and get survival money. That's not how we run the company.
Yeah, well, and that's it. Some people hear the big P word blazing it, and they think it's, you know, straight away it's a bad thing. And I was having a discussion on Twitter with somebody, and I said, well, listen, a blazing isn't a bad thing if it's for growth and it's at the right kind of level. If it's, you know, at a substantial discount to the share price and it's to cover debt or for the survival of a company, that's a bad thing. That's a company in trouble anyway. So, people shouldn't run scared of a blazing when they hear the word if it's for growth, because it can take you to the next level, can't it, you know?
It can, yeah. And places sometimes in desperation scenarios where you do get these companies raising to stay alive, the heavy discounts that are taken, the share price falls back, and it can present quite a good trading opportunity sometimes to make some decent money, because you do get the rebound effect where, you know, people buy in and average down, and the relief factor of a company no longer about to potentially go bust, and all of these different things, and what might happen in the future. So you should, even in those placing scenarios where the share price crumples back down, it's not very nice for the existing shareholders, but if you're looking at it as a training opportunity, I think we look at all of those scenarios, because potentially there might be something there where we can make some money. People won't necessarily see it, because we do, you know, not all of our trading activities we publish to market, a bit like you don't show your full hand when you're playing a game of poker.
Yeah, I like that. Cool. I don't know if you'll be able to answer this one. It's, what are your price target expectations for Kibo, Eurasia and Ariana within the next 3 to 6 months? I mean, it's like saying, you know, what will the share price be in 3 to 6 months on those companies? It's hard to say that, isn't it? It's impossible.
Yeah, completely impossible. And we probably should have a crystal ball within the office and then we could maybe answer those questions. Somebody suggested we just needed Mystic Meg on the board of directors to complete the circle recently. And unfortunately, there's no way of telling. We hold all of those companies, substantial amounts. We invested in those companies at a time when the market was pretty desperate, when people were not investing material sums in those kind of businesses, and showed great confidence. The Kibo investment paid off tremendously. As we saw, the Eurasia investment, we made good money on the first tranche, and we were a bit down on the second tranche of money that we put in. Ariana is, I'm just looking at the screen now, I think at all around, or a little bit below what we put the money in for. But we believe in all three cases, they have got significant business models going forward. And they're all kind of the same, if you think about it, because you've got, in every case, there is the potential for near-term revenue generation. And that makes a tremendous difference. Now, near-term depends on who you ask as to what it means. But in the case of Ariana, they're building their gold mine as we speak. That's already started, construction on site. Mm-hmm. You've got Eurasia Mining, who have got their approvals through to start their production process in for platinum production in Russia. And you've got Kibo, that really has two different sides. One, from a near-term revenue generation perspective, you've got the gold asset, but the main asset for them is the coal to power project, which they're working towards at Mbeya in Tanzania. So in each case, those investments are in companies that have explored, have developed, and are on the cusp of major value generation. So we think by holding them, their share prices could go up considerably, but there's no way of predicting where they'll go. When the market gets behind these things, as we saw with a few other companies recently, African Potash, where you made your first one bagger, I think. Was it 0.3 a short while ago?
Yeah, we're down to 0.3, yeah.
And it's now 3.1 on the screen.
Yeah, 10 bag day.
There you go. So, you know, how on earth, if I asked you 3 months ago what the price of African Potash would be, in 3 months' time, you wouldn't have had a clue. And the interesting thing is, you bought your shares, was it around 0.5 and sold for 1?
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
So how sick do you feel now?
Exactly. And there's a lot of people said to me, you sold this too early. I said, well, exactly, but nobody knows where a share price goes, you know, at all. And that's the thing.
You don't. You've got to be careful. You've got to take some money as you go, I think. Particularly as a private investor, you've got to lock in some of your money on the way. And if you want to leave some money to ride, fair enough. But I always look at it from the perspective of, put your money in, and at any one point in time, survey your portfolio, and if there's anything where you feel you can make a better return by moving your money out and placing it elsewhere, then you do that. You don't want to be jumping around, but don't hold on to things for the sake of it. If you think you can make some better money elsewhere, shift it, and then don't look back and worry about mistakes and so on. Because hindsight is the most powerful tool we've got in the investing world, but it's also 100% useless because it doesn't help us in the slightest.
Exactly. Okay. This question about ambition. Do you see Metal Tiger as a mini Glencore in the making, but without the debt?
Yeah. You're comparing us with Glencore. I mean, 3 months ago, that would have been fabulous. Now, I see Glencore, unfortunately, in the newspapers. It seems to be negative stories, but that's what happens in our business. It's such a cyclical beast. We would love to be a diversified play in our space of substantial size with substantial interests. We would love to have a model that has some similarity to Glencore, with a trading side to the business and direct projects themselves. In a sense, that's how we built. So it is a great ambition to be of the size, magnitude and power of those chaps, but they've been working at that for an awful long time, and we're working very hard at the moment, and maybe we can build our business in that way. We certainly don't think we are a 3 million cap company in our minds here. We feel that we're building something much bigger. The market has to make its decision about us. Investors have to decide to buy and hold the shares. When we get people buying and holding for a little longer, and we'll see our share price run through a penny, and we'll start to make solid, proper progress in the market. Then we'll think more people will come in, and we will find ourselves at a higher capitalization. But yeah, we do have grand ambitions, but we have to take it one step at a time. What's that famous Chinese quote? You know, every journey of 1,000 miles begins with one small step.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're still in the early stages, and we're building fast, but it's...
And that first step may be you naked in Bank Station with Metal Tiger plastered all over you.
It's a horrific thought, that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So last question here, yeah. And it's obviously a bit of a... Well, it's not a serious question. Why do you never see baby pigeons? I don't know why someone submitted that.
Why do you never see baby pigeons?
Yeah, that's a serious question. Someone submitted that, yeah. So, I don't think it's a...
That's an interesting thought, actually. Just to buy me some time, why do you think you don't see baby pigeons? What's your thought process?
Well, essentially, they're protected, aren't they? They're in the nest for a long time, and they're fed up to the point that they grow quickly in a small amount of time, and then before you know it, they may be babies, but they look like grown pigeons. That's my. Do you know what? I own a flat in Cardiff Bay,
yeah,
and there's a seagull problem around there, and the seagulls are bigger than the parents. And I don't know how that works, because they've obviously feed their babies up more than themselves, but they're huge. So I'm thinking you do see them, but they're probably quite big. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, I can tell you that the pigeons don't fledge, which is leave the nest, until they are almost adult-sized. And those that don't know what to look for and can't tell a baby pigeon from an adult one, in the case of wood pigeons... That's the fat ones that you see on your lawn.
Mm.
The young ones are those that don't have a white flash on the neck.
Ah, I see.
So there you go, you see. Metal Tiger is able to offer you help and assistance with regard to any question that you have, whether or not it's related to resources.
Yeah, yeah. So, marvellous, Paul. Anything else you want to say? I mean, I'm a stockholder. I'm a big fan of it. I like what you're doing there. You're working hard. You're honest. You're sharp guys in the equity markets as well as, you know, producing these assets there. But I'll put the link to you. But you can follow Metal Tiger on Twitter as well, @MetalTigerPLC. I'll put a link to that and your website. Anything else you'd like to say, Paul, before you shoot off there?
Yeah, I'd like to say that we're in an interesting phase in the market. We are incredibly... undervalued as a sector, beyond anything I could have thought possible a few years ago. We're right at the heart of the business at Metal Tiger. We've got what we believe to be the best chairman you could possibly have, with knowledge, insight, capability, who's delivered multi returns for investors in his previous companies in the past. We're working all day, every day at the moment, to push this business forward as hard and fast as we can. And I would like the market to take us seriously. I would like people to look at us carefully. And if they choose after their research to take a position, hold it for a little while, let this business grow and see where it goes over the next year or two. And I believe if we have the success that we've had thus far, going forward over the next couple of years, our business will be a much bigger beast, and I think we'll have delivered a significant return for investors, and that's what we want to do.
Lovely stuff. Well, listen, I think, you know, I bought on a little dip, I think, on you about 0.8.
Right.
I think. So, because I see this is trading in a range here, and I quite like this. And so I think I put a limit order in there, and I bought some, and I bought some more recently. And it did go up a little bit from there. But am I wise holding on to the stock at this level, Paul?
Well, in terms of our company?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, you know, he swore there. That means yes.
I can't be your stockbroker. You're not my discretionary client.
Whatever you say, well, in fact, not whatever you say, but listen, I'm going to hold. I'm a long-term holder here. I like you guys like the company. So
We put 60,000 quid in earlier on in the summer, and we put it in pretty much at a penny a share.
Okay.
We think we as a business have a long way to go. I can't tell you if when the market will agree with that. I think it will, to be honest, in the fullness of time. Tomorrow might be next week, might be next month. I don't know.
It's one of those things that I think you'll put out that bit of news and expecting a little bit of excitement probably, and then all of a sudden it'll boom. There'll be a lot of people already holding stock. Probably a few more big buys come in, and it'll probably take off. And that's what'll happen.
It is the nature of the beast at the moment, isn't it? That when a stock goes up, say 100% in the day in the resource sector, it gets a lot more people in, and then your audience suddenly doubles, and then you get the traction and you move forward. So maybe we'll get that moment, but in the meantime, I'll just carry on with all of these different things, feeding the news out to market as we've done so far.
Marvellous, Paul. Lovely to speak to you. And listen, come back on when you've got a nice bit of chunky, juicy news that you'd like to talk about. All right. Speak soon.
Great. Speak to you soon. Thanks.
Okay, it's time for the micro-macro news. Here's the macro news. UK unemployment edged up to 1.82 million in the May to July period, up £10,000 from the previous quarter. Not a lot. Earnings, which have been slow to grow, even as unemployment has come down, grew by 2.9%, excluding bonuses, the fastest rate of growth since 2009. Very telling that. The unemployment rate was 5.5%, the Office of National Statistics, unchanged from the previous quarter, but down from 6.2% last year. So it's gone up slightly, but not enough to move the percentage point. The World Bank has warned developing countries to brace themselves for a possible financial turbulence when the US Fed starts to raise interest rates, and it could be happening tomorrow, as far as we're concerned. And mainland Chinese shares led gains across Asia today as the Shanghai Composite closed up almost 5% to 3,152. Didn't I say the Shanghai Composite support level is 3,000, and it's hit that a couple of times now, and I think that's what it's going to be. It's going to grow from here. Be fine. Everything's going to be fine. Eurozone inflation was lower than expected in August. The European Union's Statistics Office, Eurostat, said consumer prices for the 19 countries sharing the euro were flat month on month at 0.1% year-on-year rise, slowdown from 0.2% annual rise in July. Here's the micro news. Here's the good news. Shares in brewer Sab Miller surged after it responded to recent press speculation by confirming that Anheuser-Busch InBev has informed the company that it intends to make an offer. JD Sports half-year sales had increased by 10%, with pre-tax profits almost doubling as the UK economy strengthens. However, it has warned that government plans to introduce a living wage in April 2016 would harm future earnings. Yeah, you can't introduce a living wage. We don't want people to work, to live. Just work, yeah? Full year pre-tax profits at the consortium firm Galliford Try rose 20% to a record £114 million on revenues of £2.43 billion, an increase of 31%. That's good. Surface sampling by Galantis Gold Corporation has raised hopes of expanding its wholly owned Omagh gold mine in Northern Ireland. A takeover offer by Infrastructure Group Balfour Beatty for Alkane Energy has been accepted at 36 pence per share, valuing the independent gas to power producer at £61.4 million. Shares in Quadrise Fuels International jumped today after the group said its trials with its flagship MSAR fuel technology will start at the beginning of next year. That was with Maersk, I think, isn't it? I've kept my eye on those because I read about those years ago. No, it must be a couple of years ago now. And I thought, well, that's an interesting what they're doing there. But obviously, then the oil thing happened, the oil slump price happened, and they've gone nowhere. But they said that the oil price doesn't matter. So let's look where they are at the moment. Yeah, they're up by 12%. But literally, look at that. Extended base level support there, around about 10 pence. And they've jumped to 13 pence today. So, yeah, it could be a turn there. You never know. Royal Bank of Scotland has agreed to pay £88.4 million to settle claims by a US regulator that it sold toxic mortgage-backed securities to now-defunct credit unions, according to a court filing. Public transport operator Stagecoach has agreed a new East Midlands Trains franchise deal with the UK government, which will see it pay £150 million to the Treasury over the next 3 years. Shares in TriStar Resources jumped after it delivered positive updates on the Oman Antimony Roaster Project. Roaster. Stiles and Wood Group have been selected to carry out a £17.7 million refurbishment of Westminster House offices in Manchester for Aviva Investors in what will be the company's single largest project since 2008. Construction materials group Saint-Gobain said Swiss Competition Commission has given the green light to its proposed acquisition of Swiss chemical firm Sika. Marwin Value Investors has sold its last remaining stake in FTSE 250 film and television distributor Entertainment One, of course owned Peppa Pig amongst other things, and said it will return part of the profits to its shareholders. And Glencore has raised $1.6 billion by placing new shares with institutions and senior management at a small discount in order to pay off some of its debts. And they had a lot of debt. $30 billion of debt, something ridiculous. Here's the bad news. Shares in Imagination Technologies fell sharply after the company said its first half revenue is likely to be lower than it had previously forecast, leading to a loss. Let's have a look at the chart on those. So ticker code IMG, and of course they supplied a bit like iPhones and stuff with chips. They are down 9% today. Yeah, I see about that's going down either 220 support there or £2. Dillstone, which supplies software and services for the recruitment sector, posted a drop in first half pre-tax profit and said it expects full year profit to fall. Oh, not good. Deltex Medical Group stocks plunge after reporting wider first half losses. Visalink said swing to loss in the first half on the back of restructuring costs. Gold miner Pan African Resources posted a decline in annual revenue and earnings and trimmed its dividend but said it remained confident the business will improve in the current financial year. And Sea Energy's first half pre-tax loss widened as revenue fell and the company said it won't meet its full year expectations. Here are the broker forecasts. Only one upgrade today, as far as I can see. And that's from JP Morgan Casanova, who's upgraded UBM to overweight. Price target, £6.5. And here are the downgrades. FinCap has downgraded Anglo Pacific Group to hold. Price target, 79 pence. Numis has downgraded TLA Worldwide to add. Price target, 67 pence. Numis has downgraded Powerflute to hold, price target 93 pence. I can't help to smile when I see the word power flute. Oh, check out my power flute. Oh, he's got a big power flute, eh? Aye. Yeah. Berenberg has downgraded Inmarsat to sell, price target 870. Goldman Sachs has downgraded Mondi to sell, price target 13 quid. JP Morgan Casanova has downgraded Rightmove to neutral, price target 38.50. Let's see where they are at the moment. Right move. RMV is ticker. RMV. And they're at 37.27. They're almost a double top forming there. Maybe at the 38 quid mark, but I'd be surprised if it gets back up there. We'll see if it breaks through. JP Morgan Casanova has also downgraded Daily Mail and General Trust to neutral. Price target £8.40. And the podcast is dedicated to your name could be here. All you need to do is click the link here and it'll take you through iTunes. Give me a 5-star rating review and I'll dedicate a podcast to you. So if you get any value in this podcast whatsoever, please do that for me as it will help me on the iTunes chart. And we all know how important that is in life, don't we? Yeah. Okay, like I said earlier on, please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation in this podcast. Use it as a stepping stone to your own research, and from there, you know, make up your mind what you want to do. All right, but thank you very much for listening. Speak tomorrow. Oh, by the way, tomorrow, Thursday, I've got Stefan, the main guy from MX Oil, on the podcast, hopefully. So if you've got any questions for Stefan, go to sharepickers.com, and I'll put a link there, and you can ask a question for Stefan. All right, thanks for listening. Speak tomorrow.
The ADBFN podcast with Justin Waite.